Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn to Page, Season 6, Book 5 of Dungeons and Dragons, Endless Quest, Escape from Castle Ravenloft. You are the cleric. How do you feel about that?
I feel like being a cleric in Castle Ravenloft seems like a really good idea. I feel like it's sad, though, to be here at the precipice of the end of Season 5. These books have been really enjoyable.
I have enjoyed it a lot. I, you know, not to peel the curtain back too much, I was like, I wonder, these are more modern. Like, I don't know how great it's going to be, and it blew my expectations away. I've really enjoyed these. They've been just the right amount of unhinged, but like they're also the right amount of well-written. It's fun universes. I don't know. I just, you know, obviously taking from the modules and stuff, but still, I've really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I wish there were more of these. Obviously, there's more Endless Quest. We've talked about that, but this is the rest of the ones in like the 2018 or something? 2014?
2018, I believe, 2018. Is this publication of the season. Yeah. I think it is specifically the strength of them being based upon those pre-existing modules that allows them to be so comprehensive as well as so wacky at the same time, because they have such like a large canon pool with which to draw from and can navigate freely within that space. So anything like, you know, suddenly introducing a frog behemoth, right, still feels consistent within that space.
I say so, but like I think the big thing that I've been that has surprised me pleasantly is that it, even knowing that they are based on modules, it doesn't it feel as much just based on the module. It almost feels like it is based off of a campaign they ran of that module, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which I like that a lot, because that doesn't sound like it'd be a big distinction, but it is. Like the way you run Curse of Strahd and how, you know, your family or your friends played Curse of Strahd and what you've done to it is pretty different than, you know, the story as written. Not that I don't know why I'd mention Curse of Strahd, because that has not been one of the modules or anything at all whatsoever.
Exactly, and I can't imagine it will be anytime in the near future as we go into Escape from Castle Ravenloft.
Indeed. So why don't you, I will say the one thing I'm looking forward to is maybe getting a better beware page phrase, because why don't you halt adventurer us?
Halt adventurer? And read these words before you proceed. This is not a journey for those who prefer to sit back and let others make the tricky decisions. This is a journey for a leader, a true hero. One who is not afraid to face off against vampires, stand against zombies, or battle against werewolves. If this doesn't sound like you, turn back now and forget you ever came this way. But if this whiff of adventure has whet your appetite, then forward with you, my friend, and good luck.
That is a good smelling adventure. That's a nice whiff. I'm in.
Vampires, zombies, vampires? Werewolves?
Oh my. All right. Well, man, this picture, he sure looks... No, couldn't be. Couldn't be.
It's almost like he didn't want to be in the sunlight when that picture was...
Strange. The way he got dressed, it's like he couldn't even see himself in the mirror.
I mean, wearing all black and red like that, it's so gauche.
Yeah, he's very pale. He needs to see a dentist, too. Those two sharp teeth. Anyways, you wake in a large four-poster bed in a musty room that smells of cold stone and ancient death. As you look outside the wide window, you witness the last glow of a setting sun muffled behind thick clouds as it fades away, leaving darkness to take the sky. Where are you? How'd you get here? The last you remember, you were leaving the town of Daggerford, and after presiding over evening services as the cleric of Tyr. Daggerford is such a funny... I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
It a lot of times the name of an area will tell you a lot about the history of it. So I don't know how Daggerford earned its name.
Yeah. Services as the cleric of Tyr, the god of justice, part of an outreach effort you've been making from your nearby home of Waterdeep. As you'd set out on the road, a thick fog enveloped you, making it almost impossible to see past your horse's nose. Maybe you should have turned back, but you could barely see the road in any direction. You stopped as you pondered your predicament. And that's when you saw a pair of glowing red eyes emerging from the shrouding blackness. You sit up in the bed, throwing off the sheer black sheets and thick blankets. Thankfully, you're fully clothed, although in an old... Thankfully, you're fully clothed. Why? Anyways. Although in an old-fashioned and high-collared outfit that you don't recognize. Your armor and weapons are missing. Your hand goes to your throat and you find that you're wearing your necklace. It bears the holy symbol of your chosen god, Tyr. The familiar feel of it gives you comfort, and you breathe a tentative sigh of relief. Your breath catches in your chest when you realize that you're not alone. A haughty man with jet black hair and pale white skin tinged with blue steps out from the shadows. He's dressed in an exquisite black cloak lined with crimson silk, layered over a pristine white shirt and coal black pants. I feel like a black cloak lined with crimson, I feel like I wouldn't need to be told anything else. That man is either a vampire or a magician.
I didn't even think of the second possibility.
And I have
stabbed a lot of magicians in retrospect. I was wondering why they didn't puff away into smoke.
I mean, yeah, it's like they still died because I still stabbed them in the heart with a wooden stake. But like,
exactly. That works on most things.
It works on most living things. He wears his ebony hair slicked back from his wide forehead, Rude, in sharp widow's peak, and tucked behind his pointed ears. He's not breathing. You instantly recognize his eyes, which glow with a hellish hue. You last saw them on the road to Waterdeep. He bares his teeth in what he may believe is a welcoming smile. The pointiness of his canine teeth, though, shoots a shudder down your spine. He can only be a magician. He can only be a vampire.
I am Count Strahd von Zarovich,
he says with the accent of an ancient aristocrat.
Welcome to Castle Ravenloft, your new home.
You study your voice before you reply.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful,
you inform him,
but this isn't my home.
The Count smiles again.
Ah, it may take time to adjust, but you will come to love Ravenloft once you have been fully recruited. All members of my court do.
You stand up to defy the wicked creature.
I have no interest in joining your court, nor in spending another moment here.
Strahd chuckles.
Time has a way of changing minds, and I have as much time as I like.
He gives you a shallow bow and makes for the door.
I leave you now to your own devices. While you may be my guest here, I ask you to confine yourself to this room and the lounge next to it, for your own sake. Also, please remember this. My time on this world may be unlimited, but my patience with those who disrespect my hospitality isn't.
As the vampire lord strides out the door, you contemplate your options. Perhaps it would be better to confront him now, but he exudes so much power, you worry that not even Tyr could protect you. Would you like to climb out the window on page 6, attack Strahd on page 8, escape through the door on page 16? I love that it's an option again.
Just to attack
the
big
bad immediately again.
I really want to do it.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll die. I don't care. I'm fine to see why we die. As Strahd strolls away from you, you leap for the door, creaking closed behind him, and jam your foot in it. He spins around and blinks at you, confused for a moment at what you're trying to do. You grab the holy symbol from around your neck, shove open the door, and thrust the symbol into his face.
Back, you foul beast!
You shout at him.
The holy power of Tyr compels you.
Slowly, the edges of his lips curl up into a cruel smile.
Perhaps you would care to rephrase that.
He cocks a pointed ear towards you as if he couldn't possibly have heard you right. You suppress a gasp of surprise at how little Strahd seems to care about your demands, and you hold your holy symbol steady before you, out at your full arm's length. You pray with all of your might that Tyr will lend you what strength you need to defeat this vampire. Worshipping your god has gotten you this far in life, after all, and you wouldn't put your trust in your unshakable faith that he won't ignore you now. And you did put
Get back, you undead monster! You're an atrocity! Your very existence is an offense to the living!
Is this the Neopets form or something? Like, some sass.
That's the way that someone speaks when they realize that any swear word will be censored, and they're like, yeah. Look, I'm going to have to get creative.
Yeah. You dumb head. Strahd is unmoved.
Your very existence is an offense to the living.
Strahd is unmoved.
Now, this,
he says,
is exactly the kind of disrespect I was talking about. What kind of a guest treats a host like that?
I'm not your guest!
You shout. Strahd gives you a weary and disappointed shrug. Then he punches you in the chest. You fly backwards, as if you've been kicked by an angry horse. The impact sends you reeling into one of the posts on the bed behind you, and it snaps in half, the black canopy spilling down after you. Desperate to untangle yourself, you claw back the fabric and see that Strahd is already standing over you, with scowling into your face.
See, this is the exact sort of thing that I was hoping to avoid,
he says, and he clucks his tongue at the broken bedpost.
Do you know how hard it is to find a good joiner in Barovia?
Your hand trembles in fear as you raise your holy symbol once more, but Strahd backhands it away and it flies from your grasp and it goes clattering across the floor.
Don't be an idiot,
he says with a vicious snarl.
If such trinkets bothered me, do you think I would not have removed it while you slept?
Strahd grabs you by the throat and lifts you to your feet. His fangs are longer now than before, sharp, wet, and ready.
I could kill you right now,
he says. You try to pry his fingers away from your neck, but they hold you as fast as an iron collar. You don't doubt that he's right, that he could murder you in an instant.
If you wanted to do that, I'd already be dead.
How far back can this go? If that bothered me, I would have removed it. Oh, if you would have killed me, you would have done it. Oh, well, if you would have been grateful, you'd have been it by now. Oh, well, if you'd be a good adventurer, you wouldn't have been here. Yeah.
If your parents never met.
Yeah, if your parents never met, you wouldn't be Strahd von Vampire. You manage to choke out. He admits your correctness with a grim nod and releases your neck. With your legs lacking all strength, you collapse to the carpet beneath you. As you gasp for breath, you see a set of booted feet walk into
Damn,
the room.
Damn, those feet are boosted.
Zoom! Walk into the room and halt behind Strahd's cape. And you discover that the two of you are no longer alone. The vampire lord steps aside to reveal a pale-skinned soldier who stares at you with wide, hungry eyes.
I no longer have any use for you,
Strahd says as you push yourself to your feet.
But the same isn't true for my friend here. Since you have proven yourself to be that sort of guest, I will leave you to his tender mercies.
With that, the vampire lord dissolves into a cloud of mist that disappears beneath the door that the soldier closed behind him. Alone with the soldier, you look into his eyes as he bares his savage fangs, and you realize that you've already made your final mistake. The end. What, attacking the big bad immediately the second you see him in the book? That's a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that went how I would assume.
100%, but yeah. I didn't want to see it.
I needed to know.
Do you think a window or escaping through a door is more viable in this scenario?
Huh.
It's difficult, right? The door takes us into, I imagine, the rest of the castle, where I imagine the rest of the courtier. Yeah. However, out the window, there's vampires and bats and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lose-lose. I also would imagine mm-hmm. that the majority of the story would be in Castle Ravenloft. But also, it does say escape from Castle Ravenloft. If we climb out the window, we've technically done it already.
Yeah, it's true. We're no longer in Castle Ravenloft. We are splattered outside of the ground of Castle Ravenloft.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards door at this point, after all that.
Let's do it.
As the Count leaves the room, you let the door close behind him. You return to the bed and sit on the edge of it for a moment as you contemplate the choices you've made in your life and somehow how they led you to this moment. Did you vent here in some way? Did he mean for the vampire to capture you as punishment for something you did wrong? Or is this perhaps a test of your faith? Of your steadfastness? Of your ability to help yourself? Or maybe this has nothing to do with Tyr. Maybe the vampire just saw you and picked you out of random. An unfortunate victim of whom to visit this horrible plans, whatever they might be. Falling to your knees, you pray to Tyr for guidance, but he does not answer. Then again, it's rare for gods to communicate directly to their followers, even so devout a priest as you. The need for justice speaks for itself, and you have to your studies of Tyr's word to guide you. Still, the time spent in prayer helps to clear your head and strengthen your resolve as to find a way out. After rising to your feet, you search the room. If Strahd still has your armor and weapons, he did not leave them here. There's a large walk-in closet. So him taking them does mean that he was afraid of them, because we know he's afraid. So he's afraid of our armor. He's scared of it. There's a large walk-in closet, but there's nothing in it but a dusty black cloak hanging from a hook on the far wall. Donning the cloak, you return to the bedroom. Seeing no other escape, you sidle up to the door and listen at it, wondering if Strahd is on the opposite side, waiting for you to emerge. After a long moment, you decide to chance it and crack open the door, where it creaks on its ancient hinges with a noise so loud you wonder if it could alert the entire castle. There's a room beyond, although you can't see much of it through the crack. Shoving the door entirely open, you wait in the doorway breathless, looking for any sign of Strahd or his underlings. Not even a mouse comes to investigate. You breathe again and step over the threshold. Thunder shakes the tower from some distant storm that doesn't seem to have broken yet, and least not that you can see through the wide windows of the leaded glass that occupy the opposite wall. Three ornate lanterns hang from the ceiling in this room, and by their dim glow, you can see a pair of overstuffed couches and a bulging bookshelf. You examine the books, hoping that they might provide some clue for escaping your predicament, but the titles prove useless in that regard. They include... you know what? I don't see a lot of voices here. What do they include?
Embalming! The Lost Art. Life Among the Undead. Learning to Cope. Castle Building 101. And Goats of the Balanok Mountains.
Life Among the Undead, Learning to Cope. I do like it. Several of them seem to have been written by Strahd himself. Looking around, you spy another door on the far end of the bookshelf and pad over to it silently as you can manage. It creaks when you open it, but not nearly as loudly as the door to the bedchamber. Beyond, you find a smaller room shrouded in darkness. There are no loose lanterns around, only ones attached to bolts or chains. So you go back to the bedroom in which you woke and break one of the posts from the bed. Don't you know how hard it is to find a good joiner? Come on!
That's exactly what Strahd was afraid of.
You wind strips of bedsheets around the end of it, and then you light your makeshift torch, using the flames from one of the lanterns bolted to the wall near the bookshelf. Now you're ready to deal with whatever the darkness holds for you, or so you hope. You return.
Hang on. I love the idea that, like, okay, I'm facing a vampire. I'm going to break off one of these wooden posts
and,
wrap this around it and use it as a torch.
Yeah. To be fair, we think he's a magician, which are weak to fire. Most up-close magicians I've met are really weak to me setting them on fire.
Yeah, they never like it.
They always hate it. They 100% of the time when I set them on fire, they get set on fire and don't like it.
That means it's effective.
Yep. You return to the darkened room and discover a portrait of Strahd hangs on the wall to your left. Spiral staircase just beyond the portrait leads upwards, and another spiral staircase next to it leads downwards. You bring your torch closer and see what this image shows Strahd from the days before his transformation. His eyes seem to follow you around no matter where you move. The portrait disturbs you so much that you back away onto the carpet on the far end of the room. As you step upon it, the rug curls up at its edges and attacks. Rising, it tries to wrap itself around you, but you leap away before it gets your entire body in its grip, leaving it clinging to only your legs. You slam your torch down. and then we just use it as a blunt weapon.
Never mind, we were prepared.
Yeah. You slam your torch down onto the rug and it recoils as you singe its threads. Oh, okay. Pressing your advantage, you shove the torch into it over and over until the entire thing catches fire. All right, valid. The rug goes up fast. You find yourself grateful that the tower's floor here is made of stone. You look at the portrait of Strahd and find it glaring at you.
Leave me alone,
you tell it.
And you won't share the rug's fate.
It's time to move on. Descend or ascend the stairs. I love the thought. It's like going up to somebody with a sheet of paper and a lighter, setting the paper on fire, going, yeah, and if you don't do what I say, you're next.
Yep.
It's just not, I don't know.
That's you.
It's just not that, it's not as threatening, I guess. when it's a rug that you burned. I don't know.
Exactly. It's like, I know the rug could have been menacing. It says that it's coming, like, up upon us and it's grappling and wrapping us. But at the same rate, it is fundamentally an inanimate object. Yeah. It may be animate at the moment, but people, no one's going to clock that as you're standing over the corpse of it saying, "Are you next?"
It is, yeah, innately a wee bit silly. Hey, as a resident Curse of Strahd player, having played her, does descending or ascending mean anything to you? Because to me, it means nothing. Like, it's a coin flip.
So without spoiling the mechanics of the module,
yes.
Okay. My answer is no.
I'm going to say we should ascend.
Sure.
Shoot. You die. Everyone knows in Ravenloft, if you go up, you die. Oh, shoot.
Got him. Absolutely got him.
Oh, pranked! You decide that you decide that down seems dangerous and that it's smarter to head upwards, where you can get a better look at wherever and whatever Castle Ravenloft is. At the top of the stairs, you reach the roof of the tower. You walk to the crenellations lining the edge of the circular roof. You gaze out over what you can see of the castle under the muted moonlight of the cloudy sky. Castle Ravenloft is stunning, yet creepy, and a feast for the eyes. Towers spike from its main building in several different places. Once upon a time, it must have been an amazing place, but now it's become a decrepit and haunted wreck. Off to the north, there's a bridge that connects the tower you're on to a taller tower in the north side of the castle. You could cross it, but there's no railings. Falling off the side would mean tumbling down to the courtyard, which yawns nearly 200 feet below. Feet below. The tower.
It's 200 of them. It's plural.
200 feets. Little feet. The tower that you're on top of sits in the center of the castle. It also butts up against the outside of yet another tower that stretches skyward next to it. The other tower has no windows or doors that you can see. Unless you can figure out how to walk through walls, there's no way into it. As you contemplate praying to Tyr for a spell that could deliver you safely to the ground from your perch high above Ravenloft's courtyard, you lean against the other tower. You look above you and you see a spindly little man hanging in the vines that spiral along the tower. The man, if that is in fact what he is, looks down at you with unblinking eyes that glitter in the moonlight. He doesn't say a word. He just hangs there, like a spider in a web.
Hello?
You call softly. You're not sure this is wise. The man could easily call out to Strahd and expose your attempt to escape from the castle. The fact that he hasn't done so yet gives you a sliver of hope that there might somehow be an ally found here. The man does not respond. Instead, he creeps closer, climbing down the vines head first, never taking his eyes off of you. As he nears, you realize that he is not human at all. He's about the size of a halfling or a gnome, but he doesn't belong to either race. Whatever he is, he's not breathing. Could he be an undead creature encased in some sort of elaborate armor? You wouldn't put it beyond Strahd to be so cunning. You put a hand on your holy symbol and then raise it before you ward off the undead. You're not sure if it'll work against the creature, but you don't have many other options left at hand. Turn to page 21, if we die after all that. Using your holy symbol to display your faith might not affect a creature as powerful as Strahd, but Tyr's favor is often proven strong enough for you to drive lesser undead away.
Get back!
You say, as the strange thing lowers itself next to you.
The power of Tyr protects me.
The creature offers you a tinny laugh. You can see it clearly now, and you realize that it's neither living nor undead, but a construct, a clockwork creature built to resemble a small man in the clothes of a court jester. His skin is made of leather strapped over an iron framework, and you can hear his motors clicking and clacking as he moves.
You don't need that with me,
the creature says, his jaw flapping as he speaks. But otherwise, his face doesn't move. You can't tell if he's friendly or murderous.
Don't I? How can I know that?
You ask. The creature's jaw drops.
You can hear me? No one ever hears me.
Sensing the grace of Tyr's favor upon you, you offer up a prayer of thanks to your chosen god.
That must mean we're meant to be friends. What's your name?
The creature fidgets before answering, still confused by your apparent luck.
Piddlewick. I'm looking for my friend.
Piddlewick says as he turns his head all the way around.
Will you help me find him?
Ask for Piddlewick's help instead on 31. tell Piddlewick to go away on 33 or help Piddlewick find his friend on 36. I have no reason to not want to help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I also don't know. You probably are best friends with Piddlewick or worst enemies with Piddlewick, so.
Love him. Best friend. Hades guts. Worst enemy. I don't know Piddlewick. I never encountered this character.
Oh. Your loss. Do you want to...
Yeah, exactly. Because on site, I would immediately like this character. This is...
I'm happy to find a friend. I don't have a particular reason to be immediately distrustful.
It's a clockwork jester.
I mean, also, our god said, listen to this jester. So, it's blasphemous to not help this thing find its friend.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Literally very true. So let's do so on... That's 36.
36. Yar.
Great.
31, 33, 36. Piddlewick claps his metallic hands with glee.
Really?
He cries.
Oh, thank you so much. I can't wait for you to meet my friend.
The little creature waddles over to the stairwell that you climbed up to get to the roof and beckons for you to follow him. You do so, but from a distance, concerned that the tick, tick, tick of Piddlewick's walk might draw an unwelcome attention. He leads you all the way past the landing where you entered the stairwell and down to the next floor.
Careful here.
He points to a shadowy alcove set at either side of an intricately engraved steel door before you that seems to shine with a light on its own. A figure stands obscured in each of these niches. The two figures begin to squirm in inhuman ways as Piddlewick cackles and dances about in some sort of crazed delight. Cautious, you push your torch ahead of you, and each of the figures dissolves into a swarm of black furred rats that dash straight for you. You flail about, swinging your torch left and right. One blow smacks a particularly large rat in the head, and it bursts into flames. No! The fire catches quickly among the others, with a bit of help from more of such blows. And soon the surviving rats flee for less lethal locations.
Thank you, thank you, thank you!
Piddlewick cries as he comes up and hugs your legs.
I haven't been able to get past those guys for years.
You pull yourself out from the little thing's grasp and motion for him to open the door. He prances over to it and hauls it open with well-oiled hinges. Without any further ceremony, he charges into the chamber beyond, a formal dining room in which every item of furniture is covered with a thick layer of dust. A disused harp stands in one corner of the room, and Piddlewick points to it and shouts,
"Play it! Play it!"
Turn to page 30. With a torch by your side, you strum the harp's strings and find it surprisingly well-tuned. You sit and play a hymn to Tyr, if only to calm Piddlewick for a moment. As you do, a ghostly figure appears next to you, nodding along with your tune. The ghost is dressed like Piddlewick and stands exactly as tall. When the ghost doesn't attack, you keep playing. As you finish, the ghost asks,
"Why have you summoned me from beyond the grave?"
You point at Piddlewick, and the clockwork creature gives the ghost a tenuous wave. The ghost scowls.
"You? How dare you darken my domain? If it wasn't for you, I'd still be alive."
The ghost turns to you.
"This creature replaced me. That hardly cost you your life."
You point out to the ghostly figure.
"No."
The ghost splutters.
"That happened when he led me up into the high tower and pushed me down the stairs."
The ghost turns on his clockwork substitute.
"I thought I told you what would happen to you the last time you came here to taunt me. Prepare to meet your end."
Stop the ghost or help the ghost? I'm fine to stop him. I like Piddlewick fine. If he wants to push me down a million staircases, like, it's, I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, he probably knows something about staircases that I don't.
Exactly. He probably needs to do it to unlock some kind of, like, I don't know, secret
friendship
level. Yeah,
it's probably Achieva, right?
It's probably Achieva, yeah.
I legitimately believe that, like, because, again, it is insane to expect to find allies in Castle Ravenloft. What if the ghost is bad? What if the clockwork guy should have killed him?
Yeah.
The only untoward thing is that he refers to him as his friend, but that might just be that he's a clockwork jester and everyone's his friend.
We also don't know for sure that this one is, it probably is, but we don't know for sure that this is the friend he's talking about. Either way,
true on all accounts, let's stop this ghost.
All right. You snatch up your holy symbol and flash it in front of the ghost.
By the power of Tyr, I demand you leave that creature be!
The ghost sneers at you.
Your god holds no sway over me,
he says as he grabs the clockwork creature by the arm, and the leather skin holding the arm together withers away to dust. The creature squeals in terror and dismay. And appalled, you pick up your torch and swing it at the ghost, but it passes right through him, leaving only a chill running up your arm and down your spine. It does get the ghost to drop the clockwork creature, though, but unfortunately, the ghost turns his attention to you instead. The ghost glowers at you, and his lively yet transparent face transforms into a horrifying vision of death, rotten from the passing of years. You scream in terror as he reaches you, and you curl up into a little ball at his feet. As you lie there on the ground, the ghost punches at you with his fists.
That's the best punches to punch with.
We get into the fetal position in front of the ghost, and he just starts punching us?
He punches you with his fists. He kicks you with his feet. He headbutts you with his butt.
yeah, that's how that, yep. Every time they pass through you, that you feel your skin, muscles, and even bones wither and rot away. It's not long before you wheeze your last breath. The end. Got ghost punched to death.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't think we were going to get ghost busted.
What was the other page? Did you write it down?
The other page is 54. This is betraying the clockwork friend. We'll see if we survive this. Yeah. Karma says we won't.
Karma says no. Given the situation, you don't owe your creepy little guide anything. No. And the ghost is perfectly justified in being angry with him. In fact, you're pretty sure that the clockwork jester brought you down here in an effort to trick the ghost into killing you. Why would he do that?
He's a friend.
You're going to make sure the creature gets what he deserves. I don't like this path anymore. The ghost slashes at the creature's arm, and where his fingers pass through the leather skin, it rots into nothing. The clockwork jester squeals in dismay and looks to you for help.
Please, friend!
He says.
You're no friend of mine.
You tell him it. I've never felt worse about a decision we've made.
Mm-hmm.
You tell him as you kick the creature over onto his back. He tries to squirm away from the ghost's attacks, but you stand on his useless arm, pinning it to the ground.
But you're a cleric!
The creature says as he tries to push you off.
A good cleric!
The ghost swipes at the creature's other arm, and the leather bits holding it together turn into dust.
I'm a cleric of Tyr, god of justice.
Oh, great. Paladin cop. You inform the creature.
And justice is exactly what murderers like you deserve. Prepare to meet oblivion.
Turn to page 51. I don't like our character anymore.
No.
The ghost keeps swiping away at the fake jester until every bit of the leather holding him together rots into dust.
Please. Finish him off,
the ghost says.
I can't do it.
Cautiously, you take your foot off the remnants of the clockwork creature.
You seem to have done a fine job so far.
The ghost gives you an enthusiastic nod.
Yes, I've disabled him, but I can't physically touch him to destroy him. Just age the parts that can be aged. If someone who knew what they were doing got a hold of him, they might be able to piece him back together. He's like a puppet that's had its strings snipped.
You nod, understanding.
And we can't leave him for someone to restring.
Exactly.
Staring down at the seemingly lifeless puppet, you see that there's still a glint in his artificial eyes.
And you don't think this punishment's enough?
Would you like to be stuck here, staring at the ceiling of this room for all eternity? You'd be doing him a favor.
With a frown as you steel yourself for the distasteful task, you raise your foot and start stomping. You don't stop until the light fades away from the unholy creature's eyes.
That's wonderful work there.
Good stomping. The ghost says to you with no little pride.
Stomped the absolute life out of him. We make an excellent team.
You don't smile. Destroying things, even if they're evil things, is grim work.
I don't suppose I've impressed you enough that you could show me the way out of here?
You ask the ghost. The ghost shrugs.
I honestly wish I could, but there's just no way.
You narrow your eyes at him.
What do you mean? It's hopeless?
The ghost rises into the air and hovers over the dining table in the middle of the room. You notice that there's a tall cake of many layers sitting in the middle of it. So old that the frosting has turned from white to a sickly green. There's a figurine of a woman in a wedding dress standing on top of it.
You see this cake?
The ghost says.
This was baked for the wedding of Titania. The woman Strahd loved to his younger brother, Sergei. He murdered them on their wedding night.
God!
The ghost shakes his head.
That was 400 years ago. No one has dined in this room since.
Then how did you end up here?
I died here.
The ghost points to a bite out of the cake. The ghost points to the room's entrance.
It was too sweet for me. I crawled in here after that monstrosity pushed me down the stairs, and I breathed my last in this room, so I'm bound here, trapped forever.
How horrible,
you say?
To be alone for so long, how can you bear it?
It's been hard,
the ghost says.
Some days, I think perhaps I've gone mad.
He shoots you a look that makes you uncomfortable. There are two other doorways out of the room besides the one you came through, and there's a set of windows that overlook the courtyard, some 90 feet below. Your best bet is perhaps to go back the way that you came.
You know what would really help with my loneliness?
The ghost asks you.
No.
You say fairly certain that you don't want to know the answer.
Company.
The ghost dives at you, making your entire body go numb. Then your limbs start moving about on their own, and you realize that you're no longer in control. You start back up the steps, and a moment later, you come tumbling down hard and fast. Can't he just kill us normal styles? Like,
yeah.
He
took over our body and then ran down the stairs.
I thought it was rude to push someone down the stairs and kill him. I thought that was rude.
Yeah, but it's even ruder to leave someone to be, won't we?
Sometime later, you wake to find that your body has disappeared, but you still remain. As a brand new ghost, the end. So, what is that? Where does that bring us for path?
That takes us all the way back to our choice between 31, 33, and 36. These are our three different ways of approaching Piddlewick. All of the Trust Piddlewick paths take us to Doom.
Okay. Oh, God. What page was that that has those three? So what are the options?
That would have followed off from 28.
Oh, dang. Ask for Piddlewick's help instead. Tell Piddlewick to go away. Oh.
Both of these seem cruel, but also I know if we go with you, things are crueler at best.
I'm happy to try and get his help instead, just to keep him...
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know how much I trust it.
I'm sorry.
You say?
But I need to get out of here and fast. If you help me, I'll pray to Tyr to assist you in your reunion with your friend.
Piddlewick considers your offer.
I guess I can always go looking for my friend later.
He says finally with a hint of resentment. Uh-oh. Despite any hard feelings, he dutifully leads you down the stairwell by which you reached this rooftop. With a mixture of hope and mistrust, you follow him. He holds your torch before you, illuminating the way, although the clockwork jester does not seem to need it. The two of you pass several landings, and each one of you wonder if the creature will stop. Wait, at each one you wonder if the creature will stop. Instead, he keeps waddling down, down, down until you eventually reach the bottom. There's no place lower left to go. The stairwell emerges into a long, wide hallway that's covered with black water so smooth and still that it's like a mirror. Piddlewick doesn't hesitate before plunging in. For a moment, you fear that the creature might be lost under the dark water, leaving nothing but ripples to mark his passing. Fortunately, the water proves to be only a few feet deep, leaving Piddlewick's head exposed.
Wait.
For a moment, you fear that he's lost under the water, leaving nothing but ripples, but also you see his head and know that it's only a few feet deep. Just...
Oh, yeah.
How long did we have that thought?
So did that mean that he dove in despite the fact that his head never needed to be under the surface?
I know. I'm trying to parse how exactly this logistically works. You hesitate at the water's edge, unsure that you want to enter. Who knows what its surface might just conceal. The clockwork jester realizes that you've been stopped. You've stopped, and he turns around to gaze back at you. Turn to page 34.
Come on now.
Piddlewick says as he beckons you into the water.
There's nothing to be afraid of here. It won't dissolve me, so it won't dissolve you, right?
You hesitate.
Isn't there a better way? Perhaps we could just go upstairs a few levels.
The jester shrugs and the bells on his hat jingle.
It's far more dangerous up there. Believe me, I've been all over the castle. The upper levels are the worst parts. Down here, they're the safest.
I don't want to be safe.
You point out.
I want to leave.
Right.
Piddlewick says with a little leap, as if you just reminded him of something. Then he stops and looks wistfully off into the distance.
You know, I've never been outside these castle walls.
A wave of pity ripples through you.
Maybe you could come with me?
Piddlewick giggles.
I'd like that, I think.
He jerks his head towards the inky waters.
So, what's it gonna be? Am I gonna lead or are you?
Let Piddlewick lead on 38 or take the lead yourself on 65. Huh.
I trust him again.
I do trust him fine. I mean, he's never betrayed us yet, right?
He hasn't openly announced that that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Sure. 38. Let him lead.
Yeah. Well, my thing with, I think I trust him to, oh my God, that's what he looks like. Oh my.
I love him.
It's terrifying, but I do like him. You defer.
What's that? The famous image of the Pokemon want to care for, want to pat. Like it's just a full. Oh. I can't remember it. I should have remembered more of it if I was going to say anything.
He looks like a scary little gnome. Jester. It's pretty accurate, but he's very, very rusty metal, like gnome tin man mixed with like it mixed mm-hmm. with Jester. He's a little scary, but I do like him.
He's from a Tim Burton.
He's from a Jester. Tim Burton for sure. You defer to Piddlewick with a graceful bow. The creature leaps in joy, so much that he makes waves in the water.
Thank you, thank you, thank you!
He cries.
Oh, this'll make everything so much easier!
How do you mean?
You ask as you dip your toes in the water for the first time. It feels cold and smells stale, but with an underlying scent of rot. The whole idea repulses you, but if it's the only way out of Castle Ravenloft, and it's in this direction, you're determined you're going to have to put up with it. The water reaches up to your waist as you move further in, making you cringe from the more and more than just the chill. You swear that you can feel things moving in the fluid as if you're wading through some sort of disgusting soup made of bones and long-dissolved flesh, and you have to stop for a moment to stifle the urge to retch. But as disgusting as it is, Piddlewick doesn't seem affected in the slightest, only his head remains visible above the water's surface. But it zips back and forth as the little creature zooms down in the darkened passageway. Unwilling to be left behind, you hold your torch high above your head and keep it dry to help illuminate your path. You follow Piddlewick as best as you can, moving straight behind him, no matter how much he diverts left and right. He starts humming a morose tune that you don't recognize. Probably something popular long before you were born. As you move along the hallway, the ground beneath your feet suddenly gives way. Surprised, you fall through a trapdoor hidden under the water and plunge into a flooded pit below. As you hit the bottom, there's a bright flash and suddenly you feel yourself elsewhere. Turn to page 44. You've been teleported somewhere. For an instant, you hope that you've been brought somewhere safe and somewhere dry. But that's dashed as soon as you find yourself immersed in the dark water with your torch gone out, and of course you can't see a thing. But when you put your feet down, you strike solid ground. When you stand up, you find that you can raise your head out of the water, but you're submerged from the neck down. As you feel around in the darkness, you discover that you're in a prison cell, and the lock set in the solid iron bars has long since rusted stuck. You hear Piddlewick singing in the distance with his voice echoing off the unseen walls.
Help!
You call out.
Piddlewick, help!
But he only cackles with glee and then falls silent. You scream, you beg, you plead for someone, anyone to come and help you, but nobody responds. Frightened and cold as you are, you try and stay awake as long as you can for what seems like days, but eventually you're too tired to stand any longer. And your legs give out and you slip beneath the water's surface and it ripples around you no more. The end. I still trust him.
Yeah.
It was an accident.
Good guy. We probably did something wrong.
I hate us.
He probably couldn't hear us over the his own like joy and merriment and laughter echoing off of the walls, so he couldn't hear us calling.
He was probably laughing at like that funny joke we made at lunch.
Oh, that's why I love him so much. Still thinking about that funny joke I made at lunch and still laughing about it.
I know. What a good guy. Just out of curiosity, if we were to lead the way, what page is that?
That would be 65.
It is further in the book. We should have known.
Legitimately. Oh, good lord.
Yeah, there's a little picture of, well, I guess I won't spoil it because it's probably going to happen on this page.
I think I can take it from here.
You tell Piddlewick. The little jester gives you a grumpy grunt. You ignore him. Just because you need his help doesn't mean you can trust him.
Try going to the left,
he says. You decide to stick to the right instead. You wade into the waters as carefully and cautiously as you can manage, feeling ahead with your feet, but ready to jump back at a moment's notice. At one point, the floor beneath you starts to feel as if it's ready to give way, but you leap back onto solid ground before anything happens. Piddlewick grunts in frustration once more. Clearly, he knows that there is a trap there and was hoping that you'd fall through. You now know for sure that he cannot be trusted, but you continue on your way, not wanting to tip him off that you're onto him. Soon you emerge into a large room with a balcony high on the wall to your right, on which sit two large thrones. It overlooks a chamber filled with racks and stocks alongside rows and tools of weaponry. Chains dangle from several rings set into the ceiling, most of them terminating into manacles. Many of these are empty, but a few have bones dangling loosely inside. As you enter the room, the still waters begin to churn, and six slime-gray zombies push themselves up through the depths. They begin to wade towards you, their open mouths moaning in an unholy hunger.
God!
Piddlewick screams as he cowers behind you.
Run! Follow me! Run!
I don't trust you. That's a trap. I'm gonna get eaten by these zombies. Because I don't trust you.
Yeah, because you don't think I should.
You faced undead like this before. Mindless creatures brought to a hollow mockery of life by means beyond necromancy. And you know how to deal with them. You raise your holy symbol before you and thrust it towards the oncoming creatures.
Back, you evil beasts!
You shout.
You're nothing before the power of Tyr!
The zombies cringe away, their voices turning from moans of hunger to groans of terror. One by one, they all start to fall apart. Their groans transform into high-pitched protests for a moment before their false lives leave before them forever. An instant later, the living dead become simply the dead. Piddlewick creeps up behind you and peers around your side.
That tear must be really some,
he says in breathless amazement. You look back and give the clockwork jester a proud nod.
That he is.
A quick glance around reveals no exit aside from the way you came. So, hoping to get and stay dry, you climb up one of the sets of chains and swing your way up to the railing of the balcony. Clambering over it, you take a moment to catch your breath on one of the thrones.
What kind of ruler installs thrones over a torture chamber?
You wonder aloud.
Those who like to savor their cruelty,
Piddlewick says as he lounges in the throne next to yours.
Castle Ravenloft stands as proof of what that brings.
You get up and inspect the red velvet curtains that hang behind the thrones, parting them to reveal a hidden door. Cautiously, you open it and enter the chamber beyond. A stone brazier in the center of the room burns with a magical heatless flame. A massive hourglass hangs suspended above it, and 2 9-foot-tall statues of armored knights on horseback stand in alcoves on either side of the room. You decide to ignore all that. That's not one of my added quips. That's legit. You decide to ignore all that. Unwilling as you are to be drawn into one of Strahd's obvious temptations, you want to escape. Directly across from you, you see 3 doors. Piddlewick points to the door on the right.
That just leads back up to the roof of the castle,
he says.
The one on the left leads to a dangerous place. The center one, that's the one for you. Let me show you the way.
Piddlewick opens the door on the right to show you that he's not lying. There's a spiral staircase beyond, leading up to nothing but the darkness. He looks up at you with his glittering eyes. Take the dangerous door, take the door that Piddlewick suggested, but lead the way yourself, or trust Piddlewick and let him guide you.
I have some ideas.
Oh, hit me.
I think he's trying to game theory us here.
Mm-hmm.
I think Piddlewick, first off, this represents the construction of the Monty Hall problem. We have 3 doors. One of them is pointed at as having the good thing. One of them is pointed at as having a bad thing. They prove that the bad thing is behind the bad door. Do you change which one you hope the good thing is behind, right? Like, after a reveal of a bad option. I wonder if they're, like, pointing in that direction a little bit. But then the alternative is Piddlewick could also be going, this person leads ahead of me whenever we take the path. So if they don't trust me, I'm going to instruct them differently. he might be expecting that we'll lead the way so that we get into trouble.
I hear it. Yeah. I'm going to let you make the call on this one. You seem to have a lot
of a dangerous place.
All right. Dangerous is in quotations here.
Wait, no, hang on. Sorry. Wait. I forgot for a second. He's saying it's the dangerous place, and he knows that we won't do what he is recommending.
Yes.
So I think we take the door that he suggested, but let him guide us.
Oh, so that's 71, which is trust Fiddlewick and let him guide. All right, I'm down. I trust this guy.
Lead on.
You tell the clockwork jester. Do you have any choice but to trust him? Yeah, we had two other ones. He claps his metal hands with glee and throws open the middle door. Beyond it, stairs stretch upwards into the darkness, and he clambers up like a child on a way to a birthday party for a favorite friend. You follow right behind him. When you reach the landing at the top of the stairs, a hallway runs off to your landing. Wait, off to your right. The stone corridor is damp with the mist that swirls through it, obstructing your view down the hall. Despite that, you hustle along behind the incautious Pillwick, keeping your hand on his shoulder for the entire time, just to make sure that you don't lose him. The clockwork creature leaps up and down as he prances along the hall. Just when you think you might want to let go of him, he gives you a little yelp and begins to fall straight down. You snatch the back of his collar, catching him before he plunges through the trap door that opens in the floor below you. Before you. The sudden change of weight almost hauls you into the pit after Pittlewick, but you manage to brace yourself just in time. Using your own weight to lever the clockwork man out of the pit, you throw yourself backwards, still holding on to him. He lands on top of you in a jumbled heap, and then you rest there for a moment, catching your breath.
Thank you!
Pittlewick says.
I have no idea where that trap might have dropped me, but I'm sure it wouldn't have been pleasant.
Praise dear.
You say, as you gently move the creature off of you and push yourself to your feet. You regard that the floor where the trapdoor was, and you see that it sealed itself off again.
How are we gonna get across that?
Pittlewick wonders aloud, doing a hoppy little dance.
I don't think I could,
he says, disappointed. You purse your lips and you size up the creature.
I might be able to help you with that.
He cocks his head and looks up at you.
What do you mean?
Setting your torch down for a moment, you fold your hands together as Pittlewick gives you a curious stare. You utter a short but fervent prayer to Tyr for strength. Then before the clockwork man can object, you turn him around and grab him by the top of his pants with one hand and the back of his collar with the other. Without ceremony, you swing him backwards and then forwards.
Wait!
He cries. You hurl him down the hall and he lands on the floor in a clatter of leather and metal. But clear on the other side of the pit. Breathing a sigh of relief, you snatch up your torch and you take several steps back and charge right after Pittlewick, landing on with one foot on the trap door, but you manage to drop forward and safely land on your knees next to the jester.
See?
You say to him with a satisfied grin.
Nothing to it.
Pittlewick does not laugh. He stands up, brushes himself off, and starts forward again. This time, there's no prancing. Soon you find yourself in the catacombs, wandering in a maze of sealed crypts.
I've been here before,
Pittlewick says.
I came down the steps from the high tower. This place is filled with the dead, but there are three magnificent tombs here. The one to the north belongs to Sergei, Strad's brother. The one to the east is that of his parents. Strad's own tomb lies to the south.
And which way would you go?
You ask.
Well, if you want to destroy Strad, you might find him resting in his tomb. Otherwise, there's a window in his parents' tomb that might offer escape.
Go into Strahd's tomb on 75 or enter the tomb of Strahd's parents on 77. Is this in the adventure?
It very well could be. I will say, though, that not from the campaign perspective, but from the perspective of this book, Strahd appears to be able to just pluck us out of nowhere and put us in his home. It feels like without putting finality to that, there is no escaping.
That seems to be the case.
Let's head into his tomb and see if we can catch him unawares.
I think it's time I paid Strahd a visit in his tomb.
You tell Pittlewick?
That'd be only courteous, don't you think?
It's impossible to read the creature's expression as he digests your decision. But he gives you a solid nod, then pivots on his heel and takes you in what must be a southerly direction. Piddlewick stops at an intersection in the catacombs. To the south, you can see a lowered portcullis, through which black marble steps lead down into a high vaulted room. A thick layer of dirt covers the floor of the room, and a glossy black coffin sits in the center. Piddlewick points at the coffin.
There it is. Although he's probably not in it right now, it's harder to get into than you think.
You spot a lever on the wall next to the tomb's entrance.
Is that for raising the portcullis?
You ask. The jester nods, and the bells on his hat jingle.
Absolutely. It's just getting to it that's the trick. I've never managed it. There's powerful magic here, you know?
How do you mean?
You think someone as mighty as Strahd von Zarevich would allow someone, even one of his guests, just to walk into his tomb?
What's he gonna do to stop us?
You ask. Piddlewick snickers at you and says,
Watch.
With that, he walks towards the tomb, and an instant later, he disappears in a flash of blinding light, replaced by a man with rotting skin and battered armor, plus a blood-stained scimitar in his hand. He glares at you with vicious intelligence in his eyes.
You dare to spoil the Count's rest. For that, you shall join me in death.
Why would Piddlewick do that?
Our best friend! It's probably our fault.
Yes, probably. Your mentors taught you how to deal with creatures like this, offering up a prayer to Tyr. You thrust your holy symbol, yes, we do understand, symbol before you, and command the monster to depart.
Be gone!
To your surprise, the white answers you with a swift swing of the sword that catches you by the side of your neck. You topple over, grasping at your wound, blood flowing through your fingers. As the white works to finish you off, you hear a familiar sound echoing through the catacombs. Piddlewick's grating giggle. You must be remembering our funny joke from lunch. It's the last thing you'll ever hear. The end. All right.
Well, perhaps we should check out 77.
I think that's a call. The tomb of his mama and papa.
The very same.
Piddlewick nods his assent and guides you off to the east. A wide stairwell leads down into a landing, on either side of which stands a 30-foot-tall bronze statue of a warrior holding a spear. A soft blue curtain of light flows between the two stations, but through it you can see that the stairs go down further to a much larger room.
Is that a trap?
You ask, pointing at the curtain of light as the two of you walk down the stairs and stop short before it.
Only for those impure of heart,
Piddlewick says. By way of example, he proceeds into the curtain and disappears into a flash of light. You glance around, ready for anything, and spy Piddlewick standing back at the top of the stairs, waving at you.
It doesn't hurt, but it's effective.
Giving the curtain a steely look, you say a quick prayer and walk into it. The curtain feels as if it's not there, and does nothing to stop you. Apparently, your heart is pure. When you reach the bottom of the stairs, you find a gorgeously appointed tomb and see that there is one coffin set on a pedestal against the north wall and on one on the south wall. Small as he is, Piddlewick manages to worm his way around the back of one of the statues and joins you in the tomb. He points at the massive stained glass window that occupies the eastern wall.
Magnificent, isn't it?
Turn to page 35. That's so far back.
That's
not a good sign.
Not a good sign at all.
As you walk up to the stained glass window, you see that it's too dirty for any of the light to pass through. While you peer closer, footsteps stampede upon your behind. Stampede up behind you. Piddlewick charges straight at you, hoping to push you through the window. But you turn just in time to swing gracefully out of his way, and he zips past you, smashing through the dazzling stained glass. He sails right over the knee-high windowsill and plunges into the darkness beyond. You edge up to the hole and peer through the broken window. From here, it's a sharp drop down the face of a cliff, but you think that you can see a valley floor nearly 1,000 feet below. While it's sure to be a hard climb, it shouldn't be impossible. Steeling yourself, you offer up what you hope will not be your final prayer to Tyr, and begin making your way down the side of the cliff. What seems like hours later, you find yourself on safer, flatter ground, and free of Castle Ravenloft. The end! We did it!
A technically good ending!
I mean, I think it's pretty legit good ending.
It is! It is! Yeah. It's just... no riches?
But I mean,
no treasure?
Do we need riches and treasures? I don't need riches and treasures. We're a cleric.
That is true. We get to continue and continue serving our god.
You know what we did get? As a follower of the god of justice, we got justice. Because
that is true.
It's the only pathway in which we did something bad to Piddlewick merely as an act of defense, which we stepped aside as he launched himself out of the window, which is justice. I think that I think that's about as good as it can get for a cleric of justice.
Yeah, we were an instant karma mechanic.
Yeah, exactly.
We just immediately gave retribution to this character, and also without bloodying our own hands, really.
Yeah, I dig it. I think good end. Good end. And we didn't even have to kill that hottie Strahd.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. You'd hate to.
Yeah, hate to remove that.
Deprive the world of that.
Woo! Anyhow.
Those widow's peaks.
Those widow's.
Hold the collar.
Oh, man.
I love a man who I don't know if he's a magician or not.
Yeah, because when you... Because otherwise you know he's a magician, and then you're with a street magician. Oh, no!
Yep. No, I'm looking for that ambiguous magician
vibe. Exactly, like, are you a street magician, or are you just, like, that kind of guy?
Do you just dress like David Blaine, or are you David Blaine?
Specifically, those are the two options. You are either...
Yep.
You are David Blaine. Not a street magician. You are David Blaine, or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Oh, hey, that's it. We did.
That's the endless quest season.
We did the endless quest, which is now quite ironically at its end. It
we
lied.
Ended the quest.
It lied to us. But
how dare it? How dare you, Matt Forbeck?
How dare you? Well, technically, I mean, maybe it hasn't had an announced end, even though, like, I think that it's been many. Been quite a few years at this point. I don't expect they're continuing, but, like, you know, theoretically, maybe it's still technically open. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
we'll see if this season gets revisited at any point in the future. For the moment, these are the six that exist. None have been published, I believe, in the last total of 6 years, which leads me to believe that we will be moving on.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. But I really enjoyed these six books. It was a very good time. Very, very good time. There are, you know,
also
like
just great characters.
Yeah.
Which again, I think comes back to that, like, you have all of the characters from the original written module to pull from and go, these are the most interesting characters. Let me do some with these.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's well adapted. And again, like, I do think that having that, like, almost slightly lighthearted, like, I would not be surprised in the slightest if Matt Forbeck was, like, either DM'd or played in all of these, like, campaigns or modules before writing these books, and was just, like, cause it feels very well invoked from the vibes of those, and but still being kind of, like, a little bit more, yeah, I don't know. It feels lived in. Alas, there are more Endless Quest books. They're just very old. Which is not something that we're against that. It's just they are also not easy to find all of. So, I mean, I guess just like before we close this one out, I suppose we might as well put like a bulletin out there. If you know how to get all of the Dungeons & Dragons specifically themed old Endless Quest books from like, what, was it the 80s? I mean, send us an email over at turntopagecast@gmail.com because... I think that that's something we would be open to if they're anything like these. I think they could be a lot of fun. But yeah, they're so spotty. The amount of them that are easy to access, it's very spotty. But alas, you know it's not spotty. The support of our executive producer for this episode, who is who?
Who is the executive producer for this episode? Let me tell you a little story about a time that I was... terrified at dinner time, that is to say when I was mortified at my supper, that is to say that I had a deeply scary burger. Thank you, Scary Burgers, for being the executive producer of this episode.
Terrifying.
It's gonna be both, right? Because burgers appealing, scary.
I mean, I've had a couple scary burgers, you know.
Just a burger that you don't believe is going to be good. You bite into it and then you're like, "Oh, burger!" Scary from the outside.
Yeah, okay, I just don't try. I don't trust this. I don't trust it. Then you have it. You're like, yep.
You know what? I think it's the impossible meat burger, right? It's the one that it's scary because I'm getting this because I'm not wanting to eat meat.
Yes.
But it looks so much like meat.
Yep. That's don't know the half of it. Every single time I get it, I'm like, it's the only one. The impossible meat is the only one where I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm not positive just by a cursory glancer. Look, especially when you get all the toppings and stuff on it and the sauces, it's like, it really starts
side
to be
side,
hard to tell.
Can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Anywho, this has been the Turn of Page Dungeons & Dragons Endless Quest season. If you want to help support this series, first of all, huge thank you, Scary Burgers. Thank you to everybody over on patreon.com/turntopagecast helping us do this. Again, this series or this specific season especially would not be possible without that support, because we have that sound is me smacking a book on the table. I'm not sure if it's heard, but we have books. We have the actual physical books for this one, so huge thank you, as well as the wonderful art by Sam Caron before every on the thumbnails and arts of every single season. Huge, great job every time. Again, thank you to Patreon for helping to fund that, so we can hire the wonderful Sam and that kind of thing. If you want to help the podcast in another way, you can go over to youtube.com/@turntopagecast. Subscribing over there, very good, helpful, important time to do so. If we get to 1,000 subscribers, we can monetize that channel. And that's a nice passive way to help support this podcast to ensure that it keeps going longer, as well as, subscribing is free, likes, comments, all that stuff, very helpful, as well as reviews on whatever streaming service you are listening to the podcast on, as well as sharing any season that you especially like with a friend. We've done a lot now with quite different vibes, so especially you could share one of the shorter seasons if it's you have a friend that's into D&D. Maybe they'll be interested in this season, or because obviously we got a handful of things now, and share your favorite or the most relevant with a best friend or an almost
friend
best
who likes
friend.
Puzzle solving? That's Sherlock Holmes season right
there. Yeah. They're all bangers. So you're not going to go wrong. Just send the one that's most relevant to your friend, you think. Because I do think that they've all been really fun so far in all different ways. But alas, alas, that is that. That's going to do it here for this season. We will be taking at the very least 1 week off as we get ready for the next one. Will remain a surprise for now. But alas, thank you, buddy, for listening. We'll see you next season. Bye-bye.
Adios.